Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
As much as the Papa Roger debate and Koberger's prison unraveling grabs headlines, there's another side of this case that hits just as hard. What people saw when they were face-to-face with him before all of this. His time as a teaching assistant at Washington State wasn't just a blip. It was a preview. Think about this. In just 3 months, 13 formal complaints were filed against him. Students described intimidation, harassment, belittling comments. One even wrote flat out, "My TA looks like a murderer." Professors, too, were unnerved. One warned colleagues that if they had handed him a degree, he'd end up essaying someone. These weren't dramatic guesses in hindsight. They were warnings, real-time, red flags, flashing bright enough for anyone willing to look. And then there's Professor Snyder's account, sitting in a bar with friends, venting about his new TA who wouldn't leave him alone, following him down hallways, talking endlessly about nothing, just to dominate. Snyder called it the terrier routine. Relentless, exhausting. Like being barked at until you gave up. That need to control every interaction wasn't just irritating, it was pathological. So what do we do with that information? Because the truth is, academia is full of odd ducks. Eccentric personalities, people who don't quite fit the mold. Most are harmless. But in this case, the red flags weren't quirky. Dangerous. And now looking back, the question isn't just how did he slip through? It's whether institutions have the tools or the will to spot the difference between strange and predatory. And then when you add in the forensic details that still feel off, items collected months later, presumptive tests positive for blood, documentation gaps. It's not about proving innocence. It's about whether all of those loose ends were ever tied up properly. When you combine that with the firsthand warnings from people who knew him, it paints a picture that feels both obvious and unfinished. Jennifer Coffendaffer back with us to continue the conversation. Let's talk about this. How significant were those red flags from students and faculty? And should academia have systems in place, better systems in place, to respond faster to people like this? When you add in the oddities of evidence collection, do you think we're looking at investigations that nailed the big picture, but maybe missed some critical threads along the way? Let's get into it.
Yeah, it's all about dominance and him controlling the situation. He always had to have the last word. Look at those interactions with police.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing four now. You know, has to have the last word, has to be the one that knows everything. And I think that that was sort of what he was talking about, this terrier attack. It wasn't physical, but verbal and just in control. Yeah, the statements that this professor made were really interesting, I thought, and intuitive. But unfortunately, nobody thinks that anybody's ever really going to be a fledgling serial killer, even one under your nose.
Well, one of the students did. she wrote, "My TA looks like a murderer." Well, she called it. And you also had that other the other professor who said, "Mark my words, this guy is going to end up, if we give him this degree, this doctorate here, he's going to end up essaying somebody in, you know, no uncertain terms is what he wrote in an email to the faculty. There were people there were people that were calling out Creepy. And there's always people that call out Creepy. I like to raise my hand. I'm usually pretty good at nailing Creepy and getting it out there when I see somebody like that and going, you better pay close attention to this one. But it doesn't always come across that easy. Koberger seemed to be a pretty obvious one, and a lot of people were sensing it. 13 formal complaints filed against him in just 3 months, most of them women describing intimidation, harassment, belittling comments. That's a pattern. And eventually, obviously, they did get rid of him. Should this be something? I mean, is this something where they can take a little inventory at the college and go, maybe we should look at these things closer, faster, or have more ways of dealing with it and better ways of dealing with it? And I don't know what the answers to those questions are for doing better, but maybe there are ways of doing better at this with, I don't know, even just allowing this guy into the program to begin with.
Yeah, I think the vetting when it comes to our teaching assistants or even our teachers, look at what happened in Arkansas, right in your neck of the woods there. It definitely has a lot of room for identifying issues. But geez, how rare was this, really, a criminology PhD candidate to become a mass murderer in that little town? It's so rare. Well, and I just can't imagine, Tony, all the people that might come through that seem a little, you know, weird, half-cocked, you know.
And there, in academia, there are a lot of, you know, I guess, you know, what colloquially some would, you know, odd ducks, things of that nature. And it doesn't make them killers. And I'm not saying that anyone could have predicted he'd go commit a quadruple homicide or something like that. But you could easily get this guy was going to be an essayer. I mean, I don't think that was a hard one to predict. If he had the opportunity, he certainly would have. And who knows if he did and he'd just never been caught for it before. I doubt that. But it seems that, you know, do we write odd ducks off too much? And maybe there we should take a little closer look at odd ducks. And not always in the way that, you know, let's, you know, go after you and assume you're doing something horrible and bad. But I don't know, sometimes to help the odd ducks, the ones that, you know, would like to assimilate more into society and into their groups and not feel so awkward and odd. Koberger is one of those who identified things were getting awkward and odd and didn't know how to help it. And there really wasn't a whole lot there to like, hey, come on in. Let's try and work on this. At least nothing that spoke to his mindset. And sometimes you got Kobergers that just can't be fixed.
Yeah, it's such an interesting topic, I think, no matter what. Koberger couldn't be fixed.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. That's the reality at the end of the day with, I think, a lot of characters like that. A lot of students, though, they had their feelings about the man. And obviously those complaints were filed. But at the end of the day, what do you do? They did their part. Several months in, they got rid of him. So I don't know how much more you can look into something like that. Any more with the Koberger documents, all the things that are continuing to come out? We're seeing new drops every week. We're hearing more testimonies from individuals. Anything in this last week that's really stood out to you that has, you know, kind of raised your radar level of things that you were curious about?
You know, I think what's always bothered me is here he had this K-bar knife and that he never at all stuck himself. And for those involved in stabbings, typically the perpetrator ends up with a wound of some nature, especially against four victims in this very deadly way with a K-bar.
Yeah,
I was always surprised a little bit that even with his gloves on and his coverings, that he wasn't stabbed or fighting, you know, that something didn't penetrate the skin and possibly cause DNA either from his sweat or from blood to leak out and be found. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking at something today that bothered me. And that was, you know, 7 months later, almost in June, that there were a blanket and a coat that were presumptively test positive for blood. Now, it could have been one of the victims, you know, but why 7 months later?
Mm-hmm.
So little things like that really bother me. It doesn't mean that Brian Koberger isn't guilty at all. But I just, it makes me wonder, are there any holes?
Well, because I saw your tweet on that today. The origin of this, of the coat and the blanket, where did they come from? Was this in Koberger's possession? Was this in the house? Where are we talking here?
It was in the house. Sorry, okay. At 1122 King Road, it shows. And it's kind of one of these police reports that people do when they say, oh, geez, I should have documented a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back and document. You can tell that because it talks about Ann Taylor. And then in the next paragraph, it talks about these items collected. You know, it's sort of random, compilation of different items that they're trying to get documented. And then they list the items and then they say, oh, by the way, I did a presumptive blood test and it came up positive on the blanket with pink on it and on a green coat, I think with pink as well. And that's all it says. And so I'm looking now for, and we haven't gotten a lot of the lab stuff, but I want to see where it says, yeah, so I sent it in, which I don't see there, to be tested to the lab. And I just wonder, was it, you know, hey, did you guys test that? Was it Maddie's? Was it Kaylee's? Was it Koberger's?
I feel there's little areas in this case. I'm not an investigator. I'm just the Monday morning quarterback with a microphone and a YouTube channel. But I feel like there's little things in here. They're like, why didn't we look a little closer at this? And nothing, none of it like changes that Koberger did it. It's just more like we were about to go to trial and this wasn't quite up to snuff yet. It wasn't quite ready for prime time, if you will, I think, had that trial begun. I feel that way on Papa Roger. I kind of feel that way about that too. And I don't know what the answers are to some of those questions other than maybe, you know, we just don't know the other half and had this gone to trial. There's another part to this report. There's another part to the Papa Rogers that maybe we would see. Maybe we still will see at some point in time.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part. I mean, you know, I've got only 500 pages from the state police, and I guarantee you there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages that we don't have yet.
Yeah.
Moscow has given some, but they haven't given everything. And forget about the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not going to see, remember, 60 agents at one point were assigned to this case, 60 agents, and all the analysts that were assigned across the country working on the trying to figure out that Elantra, that plate, who might have owned it and all of that, scouring all that information. I don't know if and when we'll ever see any of those reports because FOIA to the Bureau are extremely difficult to get information from them.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. One of those, however, does not seem to be, did we get the right person? I think that one is pretty well answered. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you so much for coming on here and giving us your insight. Be sure to check out Jennifer's channel, Break the Case, which you can get on YouTube, or you can also listen anywhere you get podcasts. You're now part of our podcast network, so you can hear her anytime on there. Just search Break the Case wherever you get your podcasts. You got some really fascinating interviews coming up here. I know in this next week or so, what do you have on deck here?
Well, I'm really excited. I'm going to be interviewing one of the homicide detectives that I worked a case with in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas homicide for decades. Also was featured on 48 Hours multiple times. So kind of a star of his own. No, he's a very quiet, just great guy. Anyway, Dale Lundberg is going to be joining, and we're going to be breaking down Delphi a little bit more.
Great.
I know it's adjudicated. I know Richard Allen's gone, but we're going to talk about it a little bit from his vantage point. And then also have another podcast coming up about Brian Koberger, kind of breaking down some more items that we talk about here a lot.
Yeah.
And some people ask Tony, you know, hey, listen, he's gone. He's, you know, why are we talking about this? And the reason, at least for me, is it's been almost 3 years of not being able to see anything on a case we were all very invested in. And it's about really trying to see and understand in detail this investigation and this case, because all we've ever gotten are snippets. Quite frankly, we're still getting a block of Swiss cheese, Tony.
This is where the case stops being abstract and becomes uncomfortably real. Because it's one thing to dissect court filings and digital trails. It's another to hear professors and students say, in plain language, this guy is dangerous. They weren't just creeped out. They were predicting disaster. And still, for months, he stayed in the role. Still, those complaints piled up. Still, the system shrugged until it was too late. But what would the system have done? The system did just fire him. After the crimes were committed, they didn't know it yet, but he got canned. But was that just another passing of the trash, as we've learned already? Someone else's problem, be gone. That's a part that lingers for me. Academia, like many institutions, often doesn't know what to do with someone who doesn't fit. They write it off as eccentricity, awkwardness, as a personality issue. But when those eccentricities turn into patterns of harassment, intimidation, and domination, you're not just dealing with a quirky, odd duck, you're dealing with a warning sign. And in Koberger's case, those signs weren't subtle. They were screaming. The evidence quirks only add fuel to that fire. A blanket and a coat flagged for presumptive blood months after the fact. Documentation that feels patched together. Again, it doesn't undo the mountain of evidence against him, but it does raise a question. Were investigators so focused on the big narrative that they missed opportunities to shore up the smaller details? Because if this had gone to trial, you can bet a defense attorney would have pounced on those holes. Maybe that's the larger theme here. Whether it's academia overlooking red flags or law enforcement leaving small threads dangling, what we're really seeing is how systems handle imperfections. In this case, the outcome was still clear. What about the next one? What about the next student with 13 complaints? The next anonymous online poster who seems to know too much? The next case where good enough evidence leaves space for doubt? The uncomfortable truth is that systems don't always catch monsters in time. Sometimes it takes hindsight, tragedy, and loss before the warnings finally make sense. And while that doesn't undo the horror of what happened, it does give you, and it gives us, a responsibility to pay closer attention, act faster on red flags, and to demand tighter standards, not looser excuses. Because at the end of the day, Koberger isn't just a defendant. He's the embodiment of what happens when warnings get ignored and cracks get overlooked. And the only real justice we can pull from that is making sure the next warning isn't dismantled until it's too late. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you will find us there. Do the same thing wherever you get podcasts to find us there, and press subscribe so you can take us anywhere you go. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.